Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description. Hey, Brendo, Steve here.
And Lars.
And welcome to Going In Raw. Matt Chat.
Well, we're starting the transition from Friday Dirt Sheet to Friday Matt Chat. We have an idea for a set.
We have a great idea.
There's
going to
be some graphics involved, but we don't really have the time right now with all this this WWE 2K18 stuff we're doing this week to make that transition. So that's coming in the weeks ahead.
But from here on out, the debate show will be referred to as Matt Chat.
Hopefully this is the last one with the Dirt Sheet graphic on it. But until the Matt Chat graphic is ready, it's going to keep the Dirt Sheet.
Oh, crap, you're the one who's editing this, so you have say. Dang it. Dang it.
There's no new graphics to put on.
I used the Cooper font on the last one. I did a little stinger for it. Jazz intro.
You need to send it to me.
And then the Cooper font.
Matt, you need to send it.
Did you watch the Breezango interview?
I did.
Okay. You lived it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyways, this is, of course, a show here on our Going In Raw channel where we debate things. We use the patrons, the lovely $20 and up a month patrons, to submit their video debate questions. And
correct.
We've got 5 of them today. Can't wait to dig in here. And just a quick disclaimer, we don't always, a lot of the time we usually agree on subjects, but, you know, we'll always choose a side and try our best to debate.
Yeah, I mean, you can't have a debate show if people agree.
Correctamundo, yeah. So also, quick programming note, this Sunday, if you got nothing better to do during Hell in a Cell, if you're sitting down and watching it, fire up youtube.com/ Steven Larson, and we'll be watching it too, and you can watch it along with us. We will not be showing the screen, which will be airing Hell in a Cell. It's just going to be a shot of us.
The frame you will
watching.
See for the duration of the stream is us sitting on that couch right there. You might see some food. You might see some beer. You might see Steve's dog. That's it.
Yeah, pretty much. Sometimes my family hops in, like Alabama or Lacey. But so there's that, and that's good. If you want to know where we are in the live stream of the Hell in a Cell, ask us, say, can we get a sync check? And then we'll let you know exactly where we are, and you can sync up with us.
Exactly.
So that should be a lot of fun. We're also at Pro Wrestling Tees, prowrestlingtees.com/ going in. So, here we go. Now, we're going to do this. First question comes to us from Stevie Bradley. Let's see what Stevie Bradley has to say.
Hey, Steven Larson. It's your friendo, Stevie B, with a debate topic for this week. Steve, you mentioned last week in the 205 NXT show, in passing, that you'd actually like to see a face Bobby Roode at this point. Now, Larson, I know you'd rather see the heel Bobby Roode like we saw in NXT. So, debate. Steve, why is it that a face Bobby Roode is better than a heel Bobby Roode for his character and us as fans? And, Larson, why would a continuation of the heel NXT Bobby Roode be better for Bobby Roode and us as fans? Thanks, guys. Too sweet and a hearty handshake.
Thank you, Stevie Bradley.
Well, we got the chance to interview the glorious Bobby Roode. You can check that video out right now on our channel. And he also graded our creator wrestler, son of Power Lunch. He gave us his brutal, honest opinion.
Yes.
And we appreciated it.
Very much so.
Great guy.
Yes.
However, we're not here to talk about actual Bobby Roode.
We're here to talk about the character of Bobby Roode.
Right. Now, we were both kind of disappointed when he made his SmackDown Live debut in that he debuted simply as a face. They seem to be
relying on the popularity of his song to get him over.
Yeah. And I wonder, number one, I mean, that's a question that you can't really, you know, I don't know how much he would want to have spoken on creative directions like that at this point, this early point. So, you know, I mean, that's the thing, like, you know, when you get these opportunities to interview wrestlers, you have to kind of go into it understanding, you know what, chances are some things they probably don't want to or unwilling
can't
or can't answer.
Yes.
So why even go in that direction?
Yes, but anyways, let's circle back to debating the topic that Stevie Bradley's brought up.
Okay. What's better, heel or face Bobby Roode?
Well, you go first.
Face. Here's the thing. The NXT crowd is absolutely the kind of crowd. Well, there's actually a couple of reasons why face Bobby Roode is going to work better. Number one, any Bobby Roode is going to be glorious Bobby Roode, and I'm not using that just as his gimmick. He's a fantastic wrestler. He looks like a million bucks. The NXT crowd, for one thing, that's the type of crowd that can both accept the glorious entrance for as amazing as it is, and then appreciate him as a heel. I'm not sure your general audience showing up there at SmackDown Live can really differentiate between the two. I'm not sure they're going to want to cheer and sing along with the glorious theme song and at the same time accept that he is a heel. You got to have one or the other. My number two point, I think, is the bigger point. He was a heel in NXT. However, he didn't really do anything besides kind of being a jerk and, you know, he was saying he wanted CEOs and suits there in Full Sail and not the riffraff that was there or that is there now. So that's really just looking to bring more money to the product. And I know it's disparaging the Full Sail crowd, but, and he was a jerk to Roderick Strong and his family. However, he never cheated in his matches. He never did heel things to win. He left Ty Dillinger high and dry, but really, I mean, it's Ty Dillinger, who cares? And they're dealing with Sanity. Nobody wants to touch them. They all look dirty. And so it's not as if his run in NXT was all that dependent on him being a heel. I will grant this. I think they might be having him smile a bit too much as the glorious Bobby Roode. That comes off a bit unnatural. I think that is simply getting the kinks right with his character. I think that'll probably go away after not too long. Especially if he doesn't feel comfortable. Bobby Roode has been around for a very long time. Obviously most famously in TNA. So I think he probably has it to say, you know, hey, not sure the whole smiling a lot thing is happening. So, you know, I'm fine being a face, but let's take this in a slightly different direction, a.k.a. me not smiling all the time. However, I think the crowd wants to cheer for him. Maybe he could have been an even bigger face had they made him heel in the first place and then eventually got him to the point of being a face. However, I think regardless, we're going to be fine with Bobby Roode. I think he's going to be very successful. And I'm willing to accept a face Bobby Roode because I think Bobby Roode can handle whatever he's given and make the most of it.
I agree that Bobby Roode is wonderfully talented, and give him anything and he will perform to his fullest and do his best. That being said, whether it's being a face or a heel, I feel like that I have seen prime Bobby Roode, and that was NXT Bobby Roode, and that was heel Bobby Roode. The first promo he delivered, you knew instantly what his character was. There was dimension to it. There was depth. He had goals, and not just short-term goals like capturing a title. He wanted to transform NXT kind of in his own image. We can debate whether he was there long enough to do that, but that's a separate debate topic altogether. Now his motivation is just to prove Dolph wrong. But what's next after that? What's his motivation after that? To win a title? I want more. There was so much depth and interesting stuff going on with Bobby Roode. Yeah, he was never like an out-and-out heel. He was just kind of a jerk, an arrogant jerk. But he performed the role wonderfully, dare I say gloriously. Mm. Also, if Kevin Owens gets called up to Maine, there's going to be a massive hole at the top of the card in terms of a heel.
I'm sorry, you're saying Kevin Owens moves up to Maine?
Oh, sorry, moving to Raw.
I like
sorry.
That you think that Raw is Maine Raw.
Sorry. If Kevin Owens moves over to Raw, there's going to be a massive hole at the top of the card in terms of the top of the card heel.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a role that Bobby Roode could fill gloriously as his NXT character. And I know you brought up the fact that people are going to pop for the song. And yeah, that works in NXT, might not work on the main roster, I mean, in my mind, that just adds a layer of complexity to the character, where people want to like him because the song's great, he's really good, but at the same time, he's an arrogant jerk who will put down the crowd. I like that. That's complexity. Mm-hmm. I dig it. Mm-hmm. Several of the more recent main roster calls from NXT haven't really fared that well in terms of how creative has handled them. Nakamura came up, was almost instantly called the artist. That really hasn't worked out that well from a creative standpoint. He was treated like a star instantly. But then we had to wait a month and a half for his first match. Most of the storylines he's been involved in haven't been very good. Ty Dillinger has basically been non-existent until late. Other examples. I mean, there's examples like Samoa Joe and Finn Balor where they were handled well. It seems like SmackDown lately, especially.
Yeah, I know.
If someone from NXT gets called to SmackDown, they just don't know what to do. They don't watch NXT.
I know.
Or, you know, we've mentioned that with Bayley.
Yeah.
Like, her character in NXT was really good, fully formed.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought her up to Maine, and it was like whoever's handling her creative had never seen her NXT work. And I feel the same way about Bobby Roode to a certain extent. Like, people might know what he did in NXT, but didn't really get into it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I keep going back to his first match against Nakamura, won the title. And what a brilliant storytelling display mm-hmm. that was. And I don't see face Bobby Roode. Bobby Roode's immensely talented. He'll, you know, work his butt off to do all he can to get whatever he's given over. But the character he has now, I don't see him telling that kind of story, which is riveting and awesome, seeing him counter everything that Nakamura has to offer. I don't see that story happening on the main roster, and that's a bummer to me. I want to see that. I want to see more stuff like that with people against people like AJ Styles, like against the top faces on SmackDown or even Raw. But I don't feel like we're going to get that. We're going to get my worry is we're going to get what we see now, which is kind of a generic smiling baby face. And I just feel like Bobby Roode is so talented, he can do so much more, and I want to see that. That's basically it.
Very good. I like my points better.
I think that my thing is this. There is nothing he did in NXT that was so dependent on him being a heel that
made his run. For me, it's less heel face. It's more just interesting character versus basically no character. Because in NXT, his character was interesting. It was entertaining. But it wasn't so entertaining that you look past him being a jerk.
Yeah.
And right now, granted, it's a small sample size. They're not giving him much to work with, other than Dolph. You're wrong.
It's too much of a small sample size. I don't think that we've been given a ton. Look, I absolutely agree. I mean the Ty Dillinger thing we kind of split on. I think we agree. I think the Ty Dillinger thing. We have different points of view on the same thing. Because I just don't think that Ty has much of a ceiling.
Well, I mean, I'm not even looking at it in terms of, you know, what belts he can win. Just the story he had in NXT.
Yeah, I know.
Can Ty ever break through?
Yeah, I know.
And now it's like, can he ever get TV time? You know?
Yeah. Well, you have the answer. You know, not every story has a happy ending.
Oh, I understand that.
But I don't know. I agree. And this is one of those topics that we actually do sort of disagree on, I think, inherently. I just wish that there wasn't so much smiling involved. That's my main thing. And when he turns around and the glorious thing pops on the teeth, I'm not huge on that either. And I do.
They took a character from NXT that had some complexity and some depth, and they made it kind of one note.
Yeah.
And that's what bums me out more than anything. It's not necessarily a heel or face thing. It's just his character work in NXT was so good. And we haven't seen any of it.
Yeah, I know.
On the main roster, and that's what really bothers me.
I agree with that. My main problem with it is that they have basically ignored everything in his NXT run except for the glorious thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing that kind of bums me out.
And the fact that he held the title for a while.
And it also does bum me out. Like, the more I think about it, I'm like, man, I love in NXT how heels can just straight up win.
Mm-hmm.
They can just straight up
win. They don't need a cheat to win.
And for some reason, somebody on, you know, Vince or whoever it is, Raw and SmackDown, you just don't get heels that straight up win.
I know, because I think Vince thinks that if you cheat to win, there's more heat on you. And it kind of protects the baby faces, too.
But, like, in the end, how infuriating is it to see a guy win clean
that
you're supposed to hate?
I know.
You know, that's that almost gives you more. Because at least there's an excuse, you know, if he cheats. But, like, Jinder Mahal, he's got those little Singh brothers there the entire time, and it just kills any believability. It's horrible. It's like you want to hate a monster. You know, hating a guy who just, you know, he just cheats all the time. It's like, okay, well, I know he doesn't deserve to have the belt, and that cheapens the belt.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the great things about Bobby Roode, is that he was a jerk, but he was, like you say, a tactician, and he got over clean.
Yeah.
Off of a huge.
Now, when Bobby debuted and it seemed pretty obvious that he was going to be a face, I think both of us thought, okay, maybe what he's doing now is a facade. Mm. This is him kind of doing this in response to losing the title NXT.
Yeah, that was my hope.
Like, he's putting up this front of being happy and being cool with everything, and then at a certain point, that's going to crack.
Yeah.
And then he'll start being a heel again. Doesn't seem to be the case.
Yeah, I thought there was some sort of swerve coming. Doesn't seem to be the case. But then after I thought about it, I was like, you know what? I honestly didn't believe that his run in NXT was dependent on him being a heel. You're right, though. It does depend on him. His success will depend on how much they'll let him do in terms of his character. So, and you're also right about SmackDown, especially, for whatever reason, they have not had a great track record bringing up NXT talent and sticking to what worked with NXT.
Yep.
So that is definitely a concern.
Yes.
Next up, we got a question from Alexander Carenti, who apparently is training to be a wrestler himself.
Cool.
Let's take a look.
What's going on, friendos? I was at this past SmackDown in Denver, and in the front row in front of me, I saw a Going in Raw sign on the hard cam. Hope you guys saw it. I popped hard when I saw it. I haven't sent in a video question in a while because I've started my own personal journey in the world of professional wrestling. I've signed up at a local promotion to train and see how far it can take me. But I did want to thank you guys. I haven't been able to thank you guys enough for the content you do. It helps me in the gym. It helps me train. It keeps me sane, and it allows me to follow WWE. So, again, just thank you guys for everything you do. For my debate question, when I was at SmackDown, I was thinking that the show was really underwhelming me as a go-home. And my debate question for you guys is WWE TV a better live product or better for TV? Pay-per-views and live events are fantastic, a lot of action, but I'll be honest, I think I would have enjoyed SmackDown a lot more from my couch. So, thanks, friendos. Cheers.
Thank you, Alexander.
Thank you, Alexander. You know what? One day, 2 years from now, I want to book Alexander Carenti versus Adam Mayhem.
There you go.
Friendo versus Friendo match.
For the H title.
Chaos on Claude Street 2.
For the H title.
For the H title, yeah, exactly. But anyways, he has a question.
Yeah, and, great question. I'm going to go first this time.
Okay.
The thing is, TV tapings, Raw and SmackDown, are kind of a different beast than pay-per-views.
Sure.
Primarily because on Raw and SmackDown broadcasts, while you're sitting there live, you have to sit through the commercial breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And that can slow down the flow of the action. Whereas pay-per-views, that's not the case. It's 3 straight hours, or 4, or in the case of WrestleMania, 7.5 straight hours of wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
You know me, I like going to live events kind of mm-hmm. across the board, whether it be wrestling, concerts, sports, whatever. Sure. I like the communal experience. I like being out there witnessing potentially history live as it happens
mm-hmm.
and not necessarily viewing it strictly through my TV set. And I think that's the power of going to live WWE shows, is you get that communal experience. You're surrounded by, depending on the event and the capacity of the arena, anywhere between 5 and, in the case of WrestleMania, 70,000 fans.
Yeah.
And you're enjoying the spectacle together, watching these stories unfold before your eyes, not through a camera lens, and you get experience it all together. You get a pop together, boo together, sing along the theme songs together. And then the rare occasions, like when we were at WrestleMania 31, Seth Rollins came down, cash in Money in the Bank briefcase. I would have thought that was pretty cool if I watched on TV. I absolutely lost my mind there live, so I knew right there, in the excitement of it all even, I was witnessing history. And that's the sensation of feeling you can't replicate watching it strictly through television. You have to be there. That is the power of live events. You know, granted, unless you're that guy that sits front row every show at WWE events, you can't go to every live event, so you can't do that. Not every live event is created equal. History is not going to be made at every live event. But that being said, there's always a possibility. AJ Styles won the U.S. title at a house show. Mm-hmm. Doesn't happen often, but when they do that, it puts the thought in your mind, I can go to this house show in Sacramento and something incredible might happen.
Mm-hmm.
Probably won't, but it could. That's the power of live events, communal experience, witnessing history, and that's why I say overall, Granted, the hot dogs are overpriced, and you probably pay $20 for parking. Ultimately, though, it's a better experience than TV.
You said one thing that I totally agree with, and that not every live event is created equal. And that's why I'm going to argue on the part of just watching on TV, because you're absolutely right. WrestleMania 31, being there in that seat that we were at, being able to have not a bird's eye view, but a bird who's pretty close to the view, watching that massive giant screen all of a sudden kick in with Seth Rollins' music, watching him run down. I still get chills down the back of my spine, down my spine when I, whatever it is, I get chills.
Reminisce
when I think about it. However, I contrast that with my WrestleMania experience this year, which famously is encapsulated by me turning you saying, I'm miserable right now.
No, you say, I'm so miserable right now.
Exactly.
It wasn't just misery.
You never know what you're going to get with a live show. You never know if you're going to get some drunken yokels in front of you standing up and saying, what, every 2 seconds, or whatever those guys were doing at that one pay-per-view went to. That was kind of annoying. You never know if you're going to get somebody behind you, next to you. You never know if they're going to be scrunching you together and blasting strobe lights in your face. Or you never know if you're going to get a transcendent PWG-like experience, which both times I've gone have been two of the best live wrestling experiences I've ever had in my life. Same can be said with every other thing that we went to during WrestleMania week, except for WrestleMania itself, which is 7 hours long. And we sat there in those god-awful chairs.
Well, WrestleMania is an outlier.
Yeah.
It only happens once a year.
That's true. That's absolutely true. But if you want to ensure that every time you have the same amazing, comfortable experience.
Well, I'm going to say amazing. It's a uniform experience.
I didn't talk during your rant.
Sorry.
You don't talk during mine.
I just chimed in a little bit.
Get a nice couch or a lazy boy. A big old bowl of popcorn, some cheap hot dogs.
I don't like popcorn.
Well, yeah, I don't like you. And I should get like a 60-inch before Hell in a Cell. Get that big old right there.
Get the cursed screens.
Yeah, that'd be rad.
Feel like we're literally there.
And you know every time, because come on, the biggest, one of the biggest history-making moments ever in our wrestling lives was Mick Foley coming off Hell in a Cell, and where were we when we saw it?
My parents' house.
Exactly, watching on a little 4x3 TV.
But imagine if we'd been there.
If we were there and I had a crap seat and there was strobe lights in my head, I'd have had a negative experience. I would have related that to a negative memory in my head. However, being at the Larson's home, watching on that 4x3 TV, watching Vince McMahon show up on, or Shane McMahon show up on Nitro, and Vince McMahon gloating that he bought it, watching it there on the TV with my two best friends, was just as transcendent a moment as being there when Seth Rollins cashed in Money in a Bank.
I know for a fact that's not
in
true.
The bank.
I know
LNA
for a fact that's not true. Here's another thing: you only get at live events. When the broadcast ends,
yeah.
Generally speaking, you'll get something else, another match, another segment, something interesting.
That's called, those are crumbles. Those are crumbles.
No, it's not,
crumbles.
Because I don't know if I've ever seen you laugh harder than when Bray Wyatt
that was funny.
Left from under the ring and sprinted up the
that
ramp.
That was pretty
That
funny.
Happened after the camera
that
went
was,
off.
That was pretty damn funny.
You don't get that stuff on
That's
TV.
True.
Wrestlers breaking character. You only get that at live events.
You know when that's best, though?
At house shows.
Yeah, that's at house shows. Yeah, that's when it's best. So there you go. There's our thoughts on TV versus live. But, yeah, house shows are great.
They are.
We have another question here from Adam Mayhem. Let's see what – oh, we got both wrestlers back-to-back. Wow. Adam Mayhem. Remember, go to Chaos on Claude Street.
Saturday. If you're in the Sacramento area.
Yeah, that's right. It's on Watt Avenue. Go to Adam Mayhem's Twitter feed. He's all over.
He has the information. Let's see what Adam has to say.
Buenas tardes, friend of university. Bienvenidos to another edition of Chit Chat with the Champ. Now, Steven Larson, I got a little bit of knowledge to give you. You guys were like trying to figure this one out. So, tope is when you jump, whether it be from the top rope or through the ropes or wherever, but you land and you hit the person with your head. Plancha is when you hit with your body. And then obviously a flip is when you hit with your back. And then the corkscrew is when you do that thing. So, with that being said, in your opinion, so debate this, who are the best suicide divers in WWE? Now, Larson, for you, you're going to debate that Finn Balor is the greatest diver. And for you, Steve, Tozawa. Let's go with Tozawa. So, Larson, Finn Balor is the best suicide diver. And for Steve, it's going to be Tozawa.
Thanks, Adam.
Thank you, Adam Mayhem.
All right. Well, so he's trying to give us who to debate, Balor or Tozawa. I'm not going to do that. Adam, Chaos on Claude Street, Part 2.
Okay, Steve's not going to do that.
No, but, and because on top of, for one thing, Balor, he does like high-flying stuff, kind of, but...
He does a lot more drop kicks.
Yeah, so how about this? Let's take two of the best divers in the company, and let's debate them.
All right, that's what you're going to do, fine.
I'm taking Grand Metalik.
Okay.
Who are you taking?
We'll present your case, and they'll tell you.
Just watch any Grand Metalik 205 Live match, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. This guy does some crazy... And it's, here's the thing about Grand Metalik. It's not necessarily how athletic he is. His timing is the most precise of anybody's in the company. There have been multiple times when him and especially Tony Nese, and I'd be fascinated to see if these guys have a history working together before, you know, the 205 Live, but they do these sequences where Tony Nese will think he's evaded Grand Metalik, and Grand Metalik will just jump on the rope and do something crazy out of nowhere. I've never seen somebody, and especially with his stature, because he's not like a really tiny Leo Rush type guy. He's like sort of a stout guy, and he'll pull off these moves off the rope or through the rope. Through the ropes, rather, that are absolutely astounding. Like, it's absolutely amazing. Grand Metalik is the man. You want proof? Watch one of his matches. Watch any of his tag team matches with Cedric Alexander, and you can see them do it in stereo. That means together. And it's fantastic. It's amazing. There's nobody better than him. Go ahead.
Yeah, Grand Metalik is great.
Yeah.
He's really good.
No, he is.
I don't think... He's the best diver. Mm-hmm. I think that honor goes to Mustafa Ali,
wow,
who is, I think, far and away the smoothest,
yeah,
cruiserweight on 205 Live.
Okay.
Everything he does, it looks great. You don't see him botch.
Mm-hmm.
He is smooth. He is precise.
Yeah.
And when they had Drew Gulak advocating for less high flying on 205 Live, who did he feud against?
Grand Metalik.
Mustafa Ali, because he is the preeminent diver.
Wow, diver.
High flying artist,
mm-hmm,
on 205 Live. I'll never forget that shot of Drew Gulak on the outside of the ring,
yeah,
talking, and then out of nowhere, Mustafa Ali jumps over the top rope and like hits his butt right on Drew Gulak's head. It's great.
The shot was framed so that it really did look like Mustafa Ali literally
fell from the sky.
I know. That was, and they did that like a couple times, like in subsequent weeks.
Yes. Yeah, and just this past week on 205 Live, Drew Gulak proposed a no flipping ordinance,
right,
on 205 Live, and he faced off against Mustafa Ali again.
Mm-hmm.
And Mustafa Ali was busting out all sorts of awesome, right, high flying diving type maneuvers,
yeah,
to really stick it to Drew Gulak. Also, if you follow Mustafa Ali on Twitter, he's constantly practicing and sharpening his craft. He's trying out new things.
Well, hold on a second.
What?
I mean, I'm sure everybody, you don't just have to, just because he posted videos of him doing it.
I'm not saying no one else.
That other people aren't doing it.
I'm not trying to imply that other people don't do that. I'm just saying Mustafa Ali, as evidenced by his Twitter feed, does. He's constantly improving, constantly finding new ways to dive and flip.
Yeah.
And it's great. Mustafa Ali is one of my favorite competitors on 205 Live. He's great. Best diver.
Yeah.
Bar none on 205 Live.
Barring Grand Metalik.
No.
Do you know what Grand Metalik means in Spanish?
Do you?
It means big butter, because he's smooth like butter. Like, he flies through the air like a stick of butter. Oh, can you pass me the Metalik, please? I want to put some on my toes. Some croissant.
Of the two competitors Adam Mayhem suggested, if we're strictly talking suicide dives, Tozawa has the best pure suicide dive. Because he likes a flying headbutt at people.
Oh, yeah. And Yeah. Because he puts, like, his arms down on the side.
Yeah,
right?
He leaps with his head. Yeah.
Yeah.
Seth Rollins has a pretty good suicide dive, too.
You know, he used to. He doesn't anymore. Because he's protecting... And I'm glad that he is.
Yeah.
He's protecting that knee way too much on a suicide dive. I kind of wish he wouldn't do it. Because these days, he just goes out and he just holds on to the guy, and then he just, like, lands.
There's a
suicide dive, you're supposed to, like, really
far
put yourself
less recklessness in how he does it now.
Yeah, and a suicide dive, man, you got to give it your all. You got to just, like, bummer out there.
Tozawa,
Sasha Banks is a good one, too.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah.
Mustafa Ali's best diver, though.
Agree to see, again, this is the thing we agree to disagree on.
Next from Vincent.
Big Butter.
Next from Vincent Palmieri.
That's a 2K18 character. Maybe that'll be my creative character.
There you go.
In my career, not Company Man.
All right.
What's the other guy? Company Man versus
fan favorite.
Yeah.
Fan favorite. Next from Vincent Palmieri. Let's see what Vincent has to say.
So the video question debate topic for this week is going to be, I want you guys to debate which is a superior product all around. WCW in 2000 or TNA Impact in 2010 to 2012 or up until like 2015 if you want a wider margin, because we just watched New Blood Rising again for my birthday as part of like a Mystery Science Theater making fun of old wrestling, and it was awful. So I want you guys to debate which is better between two very bad brands of wrestling, basically. I hope you guys have fun with that. Thanks, and goodbye.
Thank you, Vincent.
Thank you, Vincent.
Ooh, this is a tough one to debate.
Yeah.
I tried to prepare as best I could for this, but I'm going to advocate for 2000 WCW.
And we're looking at what's worse, right?
No. Better.
What's better?
Better.
Better as in worse?
No, better as in better.
What's the better product? You think it's WCW 2000? Please enlighten me.
I mean, we have to debate.
No, that's fine. I know. I'm totally fine going with TNA. I just didn't know if he meant what was worse or what was better.
No, better.
So fine. Okay,
I think
ahead.
The idea is, you know, these are
have at
low
it,
points for the respective companies. So we have to debate which is the better low point, I guess.
All right. I think I know what he's talking about here. Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah, so in 2000, WCW, this was in the midst of Vince Russo's reign as a head booker.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of bad going on.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of bad. At the same time, though, this is, you know, of course, when David Arquette, he won the title in 2000.
Yeah.
Not good.
No, not good at all.
But at the same time, so as much as I like Sid,
yeah,
he was the main event way too much in 2000.
you're kind of not doing a great service.
I'm coming around to
okay.
It. Also, Jeff Jarrett's at the top of the card. Anyways.
Yeah.
I'm getting all the demerits out of the way first. That being said, it was on Russo's watch that we saw both Scott Steiner
mm-hmm.
and especially Booker T get elevated to the main event.
Mm-hmm.
And they were far and away the top stars in WCW at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was their work was awesome. Booker T is awesome.
Yeah.
And the fact that it took him a while to finally get that main event singles push.
Mm-hmm.
When he was given the opportunity, he ran with it and did a lot of really, really, really awesome work. Made WCW watchable for me at that time because I've been, from early on, a huge Booker T fan. Yeah, there was a lot of bad in 2000 WCW, but knowing that Booker T had the opportunity to show off the full array of his talents at the top of the card, I think for no other reason, makes 2000 WCW far better than any period of TNA. yeah, and like they tried a lot of stuff in 2000 WCW that didn't work, but every once in a while they did something that did. I gotta think of one now.
I know, because I'm still of the mindset that, oh man, there's so much great stuff to run down here. But I'm like, wait, I have to say why
it would be a far easier argument to make is what period was worse.
Yeah, I know.
Because even like TNA from 2010 to 2012. You had Styles, you had Samoa Joe, you had Bobby Roode, you had all this great talent.
Okay, well, here's the thing. You know what happened in 2010, January 4th, 2010?
That's when Hulk Hogan came to TNA.
Yeah, but you know also what happened? They tried to go head-to-head with Monday Night Raw.
Ooh.
Yeah,
was that long ago?
Yeah, he debuted. I remember that. His debut was, hey, we've got Hogan, so we're going to try to compete.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, it didn't last very long. And, in fact, if I recall correctly, they didn't even say, hey, we're going to weekly go live. It was like...
We're putting our toe in the water, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, we're live this week, and then, like, three more weeks, we'll be live again on Mondays. Yeah, it was bad. Okay, so... Here's the thing. Before...
I want to add one thing. Also, in 2000 WCW, they did all this kind of shoot-style stuff.
Yeah.
Which, by and large, was an absolute disaster. But gosh darn it, it was an entertaining disaster.
It was pretty entertaining. And on top of that...
As bad as WCW was then, rarely was it ever boring.
To kind of bolster your thing, if this was 2000 WCW, which granted... You know, it was a year removed from 2001 WCW, but I do kind of recall there is a distinct difference. 2001 WCW was absolute trash.
Yeah.
And 2000 WCW was trash, but it was kind of entertaining trash.
Yeah.
So I think that might bolster your point a little bit. I don't know, man. I mean,
in 2000 we had the Russo's shoot promo on Hogan leaving the company.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a train wreck,
yeah.
But it was a fascinating train wreck.
It was a fascinating one, yeah. Steiner was at his best. Okay.
Anyway, sorry, carry on.
I mean, look, you want to make things interesting, you want a fascinating train wreck, bring Hulk Hogan in and Eric Bischoff and go live.
Also, Vince Russo was head of creative at the time.
Was he? All right. Really? When Hogan and Bischoff? No.
Yep.
Did Hogan and Bischoff know this?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Well, there you go. I mean, what better train wreck than Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff forming a faction called Immortal, and then you've got Ric Flair forming his faction,
that Fortune?
Fortune.
Yeah.
Which is like supposed to be a new Four Horsemen. There's like five members of it, including Beer Money, which has James Storm, and of course, the glorious Bobby Roode, who you can see now on GFW Impact Amped Anthology.
They had a... They were advertising Shelton Benjamin on a...
Yeah, I know. They were doing that. Yeah, I know.
Episode.
Jeff Hardy, who a lot of people expected to sign with WWE, re-signed with TNA because he saw the winds of change moving to TNA. He became a heel and I think their world champion. I don't really know a lot about
it. Well, in 2011, he showed up inebriated and tried to have a match against Sting.
Was that 2011?
Yeah, it was Victory Road
2007. Was it 2011?
That was Victory Road 2011.
2009? Victory Road? I don't know.
It's look definitely it Victory Road.
Let's see here. Yeah, so they had... And here's this, too.
Yeah.
Here's this, too. I watched TNA Lockdown 2011. And, you know, it's all people that you knew. It was like the Hardys and Bubba Ray and Ric Flair. He was bleeding. There was like a big steel cage. It was like 3 years after Ric Flair retired.
Yeah.
So they brought him back. So a lot of people that, hey, you know, I'll tell you what. 2010 WWE was kind of on the tail end of a really, really bad time for them. 2010, 2011 is when they started bringing it back around with the Summer of Punk.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was good times then. But, you know, I was still sort of had a bad taste in my mouth from the crap years of 2007 to 2009. So you watch TNA, Hogan's back, Bischoff's back. For WCW marks, I imagine it was like a wet dream.
Sting was there, too.
Probably Sting was there. Booker T, I think, was there. Nash was there. There was a lot of good names there. Mr. Anderson, he was there.
Mm.
Look at Jeff Hardy with the championship there.
Look at Jeff Jarrett.
Oh, look at Jeff Jarrett. Oh, he was the AAA Mega Champion? Oh, that's so sad.
All right, that's going to peter out, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much. Sorry about that, Vincent. Hopefully that was okay.
In all honesty, I really didn't watch TNA. I haven't really watched much TNA, period.
Yeah, me neither.
I know the basics about Russo.
Hey, whenever you get that.
And Hogan and Bischoff showing up and all that stuff. And
is that Global Force streaming service online yet?
If it's anything to do with Impact, I probably don't know about it.
I got to figure that out because I might have to go back and watch some of that.
Okay.
I've seen lots of bits and pieces. Although I do love that Hogan had all that pyro. Wasn't that, who was that? Was it James that brought that to our attention? That was great. All right, next up, finally, we've got Michael Berry. He's got a question. We'll see what he has to say.
What's going on, friendos? Quick question for the debate. My girlfriend came and visited me this weekend, so love is in the air. Each of you pick and defend who is the best couple in WWE history.
Thank you, Michael Berry.
Thank you, Michael Berry.
The best couple in WWE history.
Who's going to go first?
You are.
All right.
I went first last time.
Edge and Lita.
Because they had a live sex show?
Yeah. We got to see Lita's nipple on live TV. They literally had intercourse on live TV.
And don't forget the following week, they were going to do it again.
Yeah, they were going to do it again. He was going to have Lita, quote, finish him off. Their romance was born of real controversy. She had been having live sex shows with Matt Hardy prior to that.
In the privacy of their own home.
In the privacy of their own home. And then Edge and her were on the road together. And so they started having live sex shows in their privacy of their own hotel rooms. And then they took it to live stage. They had the... They were like you wanted to hate them so much because they had sex behind Matt Hardy's back. Oh, man. Anybody who's been jilted or cheated on understood totally. And most wrestling fans are like virgins, so they wouldn't know what that's all about, but they could only imagine. I'm totally joking. Totally joking, everybody. I know y'all are sex machines. Anyways, yeah, it's Edge and Lita. Then they had live sex. Got to see nipple.
That's the whole basis of the argument.
It is! Show. Give me a break! Who else has had live sex on TV?
Well, in wrestling?
In wrestling.
Oh, I don't know. Probably nobody.
Nobody. You can't beat that. That's the best couple. What is the ultimate goal of a romantic couple? To have sex.
Okay.
When you first meet, it's like, ew. And then they have sex, and then it's all downhill from there.
Okay.
Yeah, marriage, kids. Nah, man, it's all about the booty. I'm just trying to see how many ridiculous things I could say make you laugh. Go ahead. What are you going to say?
Triple H and Stephanie McMahon Helmsley.
Yeah, they're probably the best.
On screen, fantastic together.
Sure.
Off screen, the ultimate wrestling power couple.
Power.
They're going to be running WWE for the next 30, 40, 50
very
years.
Very long time, yeah.
Once Vince calls it quits.
Mm-hmm.
So on screen, and especially off,
mm-hmm.
I don't think you can create any sort of argument that there's a greater pro wrestling couple than Triple H and Stephanie McMahon.
Let me ask you a question.
What?
Have they ever had live sex on TV?
Not that I'm aware of.
Well, Triple H has, but just not with Stephanie.
Oh, yeah, that was gross.
He had a whiff of dead body.
You.
I literally just screwed your braids out.
You.
So gross.
It was nasty.
I mean, Stephanie has been very risque back in the Attitude Era. Remember when she got her breast implant?
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, cracked wise about that. And I liked how they would slowly sort of drop the curtain on their actual marriage.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun. And yeah, they're wrestling's greatest power couple.
Yeah, and however, granted, the authority storyline went on way too long, but when it first started, they were great together.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Do you remember that stretch of like 9 years when it was like another 20-minute authority promo to uh-huh. open the show?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, remember that all
that? Shows the amount of stroke they have. They can do that.
Oh, and, that's not a good
and
thing.
And no one bats an eye.
No, that's not a good thing. Now, if on the other hand, if it was 9 years of Edge and Lita live sex shows.
Well, you would just get so used to it, it'd be so commonplace, it wouldn't be a deal.
No, that'd be great, man. Some porn videos I go back to a lot.
Every week for 9 years?
Yeah.
Doubt it.
Absolutely.
Doubt it.
Oh, man, who wouldn't want to see that, dude? It's great. Anyways, I win that one, Edge and Lita live sex.
Let's do some power rankings. We have Hell in a Cell coming up on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So let's power rank the most powerful. The most powerful. Hell in a Cell wrestlers ever. It's not hooked up.
It's not hooked up.
I like that we both look, though.
To see if it's not, it's not even...
Yeah.
Okay, so the most powerful Hell in a Cell wrestler.
Undertaker. Undertaker. He beat Foley. He beat Triple H. He beat Shane McMahon. No, he's won other Hell in a Cell matches. He's been in the most Hell in a Cell matches as Undertaker. He beat Shawn Michaels.
He was in the first.
No, he didn't. Shawn Michaels beat him. Sorry.
He was in the first Hell in a Cell.
Yeah, match. Undertaker is the most powerful Hell in a Cell wrestler.
The only reason Shawn Michaels beat him is because of Kane!
Correct. Undertaker.
Yeah, Undertaker. Is number 5 going to be Mankind?
Yeah, I don't think he ever won a Hell in a Cell.
Never really won one.
But, man, did he take some bumps.
He really did.
Number two. Triple H.
Yeah, probably Triple H. I think he beat Mick Foley in Hell in a Cell.
Yeah, he did.
He beat Chris Jericho, I think, Hell in a Cell?
Yeah, he did.
You think he did that?
Triple H.
Number two,
yeah. Most powerful Hell in a Cell wrestler. Number three.
Would it be maybe Randy Orton? Has he been in Hell in a Cell a lot and won it?
Probably.
I don't know.
Hold on a second. We never prepare for these power ranking lists, so.
No, why would we do that?
Because it's more fun to do it. Impromptu. All right, I have a list of every Hell in a Cell match. Randy Orton has been in a lot. And he has won. He's been in 6 and has won 3. Undertaker's been in 14 Hell in a Cell matches. And he's won 8 of them. Triple H has been in 9 and won 6.
Man. Wowie wow.
Orton at 3 and then HBK at 4. Because HBK's been in 4 of them and has won 3 of the 4. That's what I say. I don't think anybody's ever gone undefeated in Hell in a Cell. Oh, Batista has Lesnar. Ooh, Lesnar's a good one. Because that one he had with The Undertaker was really good.
That was a really good one, yeah. So you have HBK, that's a good one. What did you say about Randy Orton?
He's 3-3.
Oh.
He's been in 6 Hell in a Cell matches.
Okay.
Third most appearances all time.
CM Punk is 2-5, and his were crap, I think.
Yeah. So I feel pretty confident about this list.
Ew, Alberto Del Rio was in 2 Hell in a Cells. That was terrible.
I don't remember that at all.
I don't think I do either. Oh, man, that's a good list right there.
It is a good list.
The most powerful Hell in a Cell wrestlers.
Number one, to recap, number one.
Undertaker.
Legacy. 2, Triple H.
The Game.
3, Randy Orton.
Yeah, I have no Randy Orton impression.
4, HBK.
FC.
5, Mick Foley.
Bang, bang. Very good. Good job. You made good points today. I made better points today. Edge and Lita Live Sex Show 2017. Thanks for watching. Let us know what you guys think in the comments. Until tomorrow, we'll talk to you guys later. Bye.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.